The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, continuing with Chapter 5, The Instruments of the Spirit, page 647. Chitta, the basic consciousness, is largely subconscient. It has, open and hidden, two kinds of action, one passive or receptive, the other active, or reactive and formative. As a passive power, it receives all impacts, even those of which the mind is unaware or to which it is inattentive, and it stores them in an immense reserve of passive subconscious memory on which the mind, as an active memory, can draw. But ordinarily, the mind draws only what it had observed and understood at the time. More easily, what it had observed well and understood carefully. Less easily, what it had observed carelessly or ill understood. At the same time, there is a power in consciousness to send up to the active mind for use what that mind had not at all observed or attended to, or even consciously experienced. This power only acts observably in abnormal conditions, when some part of the subconscious chitta comes, as it were, to the surface, or when the subliminal being in us appears on the threshold and for a time plays some part in the outer chamber of mentality where the direct intercourse and commerce with the external world takes place, and our inner dealings with ourselves develop on the surface. This action of memory is so fundamental to the entire mental action that it is sometimes said, memory is the man. Even in the submental action of the body and life, which is full of this subconscious chitta, though not under the control of the conscious mind, there is a vital and physical memory. The vital and physical habits are largely formed by this submental memory. For this reason, they can be changed to an indefinite extent by a more powerful action of conscious mind and will. When that can be developed and can find means to communicate to the subconscious chitta, the will of the spirit for a new law of vital and physical action. Even the whole constitution of our life and body may be described as a bundle of habits formed by the past evolution in nature and held together by the persistent memory of this secret consciousness. For chitta, the primary stuff of our consciousness, is like prana and body universal in nature, but is subconscient and mechanical in nature of matter. But, in fact, all action of the mind, or inner instrument, arises out of this chitta, or basic consciousness, partly conscient, partly subconscient, or subliminal, to our active mentality. When it is struck by the world's impacts from outside, or urged by the reflective powers of the subjective inner being, it throws up certain habitual activities, the mold of which has been determined by our evolution. One of these forms of activity is the emotional mind, the heart, as we may call it, for the sake of a convenient brevity. Our emotions are the waves of reaction and response which rise up from the basic consciousness, citta vritti. Their action, too, is largely regulated by habit and an emotive memory. They are not imperative, not laws of necessity. There is no really binding law of our emotional being to which we must submit without remedy. We are not obliged to give responses of grief to certain impacts upon the mind, responses of anger to others, to yet others responses of hatred or dislike, to others responses of liking or love. All these things are only habits of our affective mentality. They can be changed by the conscious will of the spirit. They can be inhibited. We may even rise entirely above all subjection to grief, anger, hatred, the duality of liking and disliking. We are subject to these things only so long as we persist in subjection to the mechanical action of the citta and the emotive mentality. A thing difficult to get rid of because of the power of past habit, and especially the importunate insistence of the vital part of mentality, the nervous life mind or psychic prana. This nature of the emotive mind, as a reaction of citta, with a certain close dependence upon the nervous life sensations and the responses of the psychic prana, is so characteristic that in some languages it is called citta and prana, the heart, the life soul. It is indeed the most directly agitating and powerfully insistent action of the desire soul, which the immixture of vital desire and responsive consciousness has created in us. And yet, the true emotive soul, the real psyche in us, is not a desire soul, but a soul of pure love and delight. But that, like the rest of our true being, can only emerge when the deformation created by the life of desire is removed from the surface and is no longer the characteristic action of our being. To get that done is a necessary part of our purification, liberation, perfection. The nervous action of the psychic prana is most obvious in our purely sensational mentality. This nervous mentality pursues indeed all the action of the inner instrument and seems often to form the greater part of things other than sensation. The emotions are especially assailed and have the pranic stamp. Fear is more even of a nervous sensation than an emotion. Anger is largely, or often, a sensational response translated into terms of emotion. Other feelings are more of the heart, more inward, but they ally themselves to the nervous and physical longings or outward-going impulses of the psychic prana. Love is an emotion of the heart and may be a pure feeling. All mentality, since we are embodied minds, must produce, even thought produces, some kind of life effect and some response in the stuff of body. But they need not, for that reason, be of a physical nature. But the heart's love allies itself readily with a vital desire in the body. This physical element may be purified of that subjection to physical desire which is called lust. It may become love, using the body for a physical as well as a mental and spiritual nearness. But love may, too, separate itself from all, even the most innocent physical element, or from all but a shadow of it, and be a pure movement to union of soul with soul, psyche with psyche. Still, the proper action of the sensational mind is not emotion, but conscious nervous response and nervous feeling and affection, conscious vital craving and desire. There is a side of receptive response, a side of dynamic reaction. These things get their proper normal use when the higher mind is not mechanically subject to them, but controls and regulates their action. But a still higher state is when they undergo a certain transformation by the conscious will of the spirit, which gives its right and no longer its wrong or desire form of characteristic action to the psychic prana. Manas, the sense mind, depends in our ordinary consciousness on the physical organs of receptive sense for knowledge. and on the organs of the body for action, directed towards the objects of sense. The superficial and outward action of the senses is physical and nervous in its character, and they may easily be thought to be merely results of nerve action. They are sometimes called, in the old books, pranas, nervous or life activities. But still, the essential thing in them is not the nervous excitation, but the consciousness, the action of the citta, which makes use of the organ and of the nervous impact of which it is the channel. Manas, sense mind, is the activity, emerging from the basic consciousness, which makes up the whole essentiality of what we call sense. Sight, hearing, taste, smell, touch are really properties of the mind, not of the body. But the physical mind, which we ordinarily use, limits itself to a translation into sense of so much of the outer impacts as it receives through the nervous system and the physical organs. But the inner manas has also a subtle sight, hearing, power of contact of its own, which is not dependent on the physical organs. And it has, moreover, a power not only of direct communication of mind with object, leading even at a high pitch of action to a sense of the contents of an object within or beyond the physical range. But direct communication also of mind with mind. Mind is able, too, to alter, modify, inhibit the incidents, values, intensities of sense impacts. These powers of the mind we do not ordinarily use or develop. They remain subliminal and emerge sometimes in an irregular and fitful action, more readily in some minds than in others, or come to the surface in abnormal states of the being. They are the basis of clairvoyance, clairaudience, transference of thought and impulse, telepathy, most of the more ordinary kinds of occult powers, so-called, though these are better described less mystically as powers of the now subliminal action of the manas. The phenomena of hypnotism and many others depend upon the action of this subliminal sense mind. Not that it alone constitutes all the elements of the phenomena, but it is the first supporting means of intercourse, communication, and response, though much of the actual operation belongs to an inner buddhi. Mind physical, mind supraphysical, we have and can use this double sense mentality. Buddhi is a construction of conscious being, which quite exceeds its beginnings in the basic citta. It is the intelligence with its power of knowledge and will. Buddhi takes up and deals with all the rest of the action of the mind and life and body. It is, in its nature, thought power and will power of the spirit, turned into the lowest form of a mental activity. We may distinguish three successive gradations of the action of this intelligence. There is first an inferior perceptive understanding, which simply takes up, records, understands, and responds to the communications of the sense mind, memory, heart, and sensational mentality. It creates by their means an elementary thinking mind, which does not go beyond their data, but subjects itself to their mold and wrings out their repetitions, runs round and round in the habitual circle of thought and will suggested by them, or follows with an obedient subservience of the reason to the suggestions of life, any fresh determinations which may be offered to its perception and conception. Beyond this elementary understanding, which we all use to an enormous extent, there is a power of arranging or selecting reason and will force of the intelligence, which has for its action and aim an attempt to arrive at a plausible, sufficient, settled ordering of knowledge and will for the use of an intellectual conception of life. In spite of its more purely intellectual character, this secondary or intermediate reason is really pragmatic in its intention. It creates a certain kind of intellectual structure, frame, rule, into which it tries to cast the inner and outer life so as to use it with a certain mastery and government for the purposes of some kind of rational will. It is this reason which gives to our normal intellectual being our set aesthetic and ethical standards. Our structures of opinion and our established norms of idea and purpose. It is highly developed and takes the primacy in all men of an at all developed understanding. But beyond it, there is a reason, a highest action of the Buddhi, which concerns itself disinterestedly with the pursuit of pure truth and right knowledge. It seeks to discover the real truth behind life and things and our apparent selves, and to subject its will to the law of truth. Few, if any of us, can use this highest reason with any purity, but the attempt to do it is the topmost capacity of the inner instrument, the antakarana. Buddhi is really an intermediary between a much higher truth mind, not now in our active possession, which is the direct instrument of spirit, and the physical life of the human mind, evolved in body. Its powers of intelligence and will are drawn from this greater direct truth mind, or supermind. Buddhi centers its mental action around the ego idea, the idea that I am this mind, life, and body, or am a mental being determined by their action. It serves this ego idea, whether limited by what we call egoism or extended by sympathy with the life around us. An ego sense is created which reposes on the separative action of the body, of the individualized life, of the mind responses, and the ego idea in the Buddhi centralizes the whole action of this ego's thought, character, personality. The lower understanding and the intermediary reason are instruments of its desire of experience and self-enlargement. But when the highest reason and will develop, we can turn towards that which these outward things mean to the higher spiritual consciousness. The I can then be seen as a mental reflection of the self, the spirit, the divine, the one existence transcendent, universal, individual in its multiplicity, the consciousness in which these things meet, become aspects of one being and assume their right relations, can then be unveiled out of all these physical and mental coverings. When the transition to supermind takes place, the powers of the Buddhi do not perish, but have all to be converted to their supramental values. But the consideration of the supermind and the conversion of the Buddhi belongs to the question of the higher siddhi, or divine perfection. At present, we have to consider the purification of the normal being of man, preparatory to any such conversion, which leads to the liberation from the bonds of our lower nature. End of chapter 5, The Instruments of the Spirit, page 653.